Before we begin this episode, make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening so you don't miss out on new episodes. Welcome back to Fan Wonderland, and it's time to fall down the rabbit hole with us again. Once again. So we're thrilled to welcome Monia Ayoji.
Hi.
I'm really hoping I didn't butcher that. I'm pretty sure I've pronounced it right this time. For those who may not have heard of Monia as yet, she was on Voodoo Vanessa, the web series, which we discussed with a previous guest, Sonalia Castillo, and that is on YouTube now. So if you have no idea who Monia is, well, you will after this one, because we're also touching on Monia's, what I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, to be one of your first big game voiceover work, correct?
Mm-hmm.
On Wolfenstein Youngblood, recently released. And I'm going to let you pronounce the name, because apparently a lot of articles have mispronounced it because IMDb messed it up. I believe it's Anais. I think I've already butchered that. You pronounce
Anais,
it better.
Anais Fontaine.
There we go. I'll let the actual voice actor describe that name for you. So the IMDb version is Anais, and it's actually an N. So
yeah.
We want to do the right thing and naturally pronounce it right. So for those that aren't aware, Wolfenstein Youngblood is Monia's very first voice role, I suppose you could say, in a major AAA game. And we'll let Monia tell you a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I've done a ton of voiceover and dubbing work throughout, you know, my career. I feel funny saying that because I'm still young and my career is not that long yet, but and then I got this audition last year, and through my voiceover agent at DPN, and he was like, hey, we have this audition for you, and then I did it, which, you know, I would normally do, and then they booked me, which was really fun. And then when I met the director, I actually realized that I had auditioned for him a couple of years before. I had auditioned for that particular director, Tom Keegan, who's a wonderful, wonderful director. He's so lovely to work with. And I had auditioned for him for a motion capture video game. I still don't know what it is because they always use code names. So I don't know which one I didn't book, but I went to producers. That means that I auditioned for it with like a bunch of actresses, and then they narrowed it down to like four or five. And then I was one of those four or five, and then ended up booking somebody else. But then, you know, full circle, a couple of years later, I ended up booking something with him, which was Wolfenstein Young. They used a code name at the time, so I didn't know what it was, because they're very, very protective, as they should be, because then people start, you know, sharing and all of that. Mm. So yeah, and then I booked it, and then I went in, and he was really fun. And the fun thing that happened is that Anais was supposed to be a really sweet character. That's how she was written. And when I did my audition, apparently I made her not so sweet, but that's what separated me from the rest. So when I went in, he's like, oh, actually, your audition inspired me to make her a much, you know, bitchier, more bossy character than originally, you know, planned. And that's why I love this character so much more now. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's great. You know, like, as an actor, that's what you want to hear, because my take on her was, you know, was my own take. And he really loved it. And that, you know, it made him change his view of the character. So that's like a huge win in an actor's world. So yeah, but then it was really, really fun and really smooth, and I couldn't wait for it to come out. And so the day it came out, I went to different stores and I couldn't find it, which was a really great sign, you know, cause it had sold out in Los Angeles. And not everywhere, but like in the stores that I went to. And then I give up the first day because I went to four different stores and I was like, okay, it's not there. And then the following day I went and I found it and I was super excited. And then I made my fiance start playing it because I'm really not good at video games. So I'm like, I feel like we're never going to get to my character if I play. So So I made him play right away, and then, you know, we found me, and then I'm a mission giver in the game. So, you know, Jess and, oh my God, Jess and Soph and Jess. Wow. You know, come and like ask me for things, and, you know, and I'm very bossy and telling them what to do. And, you know, so it's really fun. It was really, really a fun experience when, the first time that we found me, I was like, oh my gosh, there I am. And, I was like, go talk to me. And so he went, and, you know, and I was like, bonjour, whatever, you know, like I speak French in it. Cause Anaïs Fontaine is part of the French Resistance. She's an ex showgirl that is part of the French Resistance against Nazis. So it was really fun. And every time he would do a mission, you know, he would come back and like, I would give him more things to do. And we still haven't gotten through all of it, cause there's a lot of missions and there's a lot of little things that they need to know, you know, to beat the game. So it's really fun. Really, really fun.
How many hours of line work did you do for that?
How many hours? I can't remember. We went pretty quick, again, because Tom is such a wonderful person, so he knows what he wants. And what was really, really fun is that when we worked, we were also on the phone with the creator of the game. I was giving his, I think he was in Denmark. He was somewhere. If it wasn't Denmark, I'm really, really sorry. Denmark or Sweden, or like I would have to look it up, but he was on the phone with us the whole time to make sure that, you know, that he was okay with what was happening. And because like I know some of the actors went to Europe to do to record and to do the mocap, motion capture, but I recorded in LA, and so we had him on the phone and telling us, you know, like, cause sometimes we would rewrite some lines and like, I would add some French in it. Like Tom Keegan is amazing because he really leaves room. And so he's like, okay, what would she say now? You know, like, cause he's not French. Right. So he's like letting me kind of do my thing. And it was really, really fun. So I was, you know, it was fun. I can't remember how many hours though. I'm not going to give you an odd number that, you know, that I can't remember, but I know we worked really fast and really well, and it was just an awesome experience all around.
There's a lot of voice work though.
We worked quite a bit. Yeah. We did.
You said you haven't gone through all of her lines yet. I imagine there's an awful lot then.
Yeah. No, there is. And yeah, so, and I sometimes I forget what I did. Like I found some, I was like, oh yeah, that was another story, you know, because we did it a year ago, obviously, because it takes that long, you know, for them to make a game. So they record the actors and then, you know, they do the graphics and they do all of that. I mean, it's an extraordinary process that I don't know anything about aside from the actor's point of view. So it takes a while, but we recorded last summer. So it took a year for it to come out. And I kept checking. I was like, when is it coming out? Because I couldn't say, you know, because they make you sign NDAs, again, very private, which I completely understand. And so I couldn't tell anybody what it was. And, you know, and so when it came out, I was like, fine, it's, you know, it's Wolfenstein Youngblood. And, you know, so it's sweet because I've like, there's a few articles that came out and they were really nice complimenting my work, which was, you know, again, as an actor, that's what you want. You want people to, you know, to be like, oh, she's great. So that was really fun. And then I had some, you know, hardcore gamers reach out like, oh my God, this is amazing. Blah, blah, blah. So it's been really, really, really fun. I have zero negative, thing to say about this whole experience. It was, you know, and I hope that I get to do a million more games, you know, cause I would do them in a heartbeat.
And for those wondering how long Mooney's had to sit on that, I think it was like nearly 3 months ago. She's like, I've got something in the works, but I can't tell you. it's like that amount of time that you've got to sit on that sort of thing, not tell anyone.
Yeah.
But then there's also, and this is something I've posted to Twitter as well, is that when you're in a position like myself or Monia, it's a privilege to know things and just not give it away. If someone does tell you things, like off the record or whatever, it's very much a privilege. And if you don't abuse that, it'll pay off for you. If you abuse that, as some people have, it destroys the whole experience for you. So it's and that's something that I think one of the very world class player that I chat to on Twitter, she covered that in that, you know, it's a responsibility to have, I suppose you'd call it, privileged information. And that's, you know, there's a lot of the gaming industry in particular, as people are aware, Wolfenstein was under wraps for ages. Like the voice cast, mm-hmm. I think when I knew of it, had they pretty much announced Jess and I forget them. Sophia, was it?
Jess and Soph.
Mm-hmm. Like, and like that, those were about the only two cast members announced. I was going, where's Monia? And I don't think that even dropped until about a day or two after release. So it's
the same day I checked, because like I kept looking on IMDb, you know, because I was like, because also like as like, actors, you're always paranoid, you know. You're also like, oh my gosh, what if they cut me out? You know, like there's always that moment. So I kept checking, and like the articles came out. They were like, coming, it's coming, it's coming. And then the day of, like it's a well-oiled machine. Like that really impressed me. Like the day it got released, everything was on there. Like the whole cast and the director. And like, but until that day, nothing, like nothing. Just Wolfenstein Youngblood released date. July, whatever it was. So that was it. But then the day of, everything was on there. And I was like, yay! Yeah.
I think given, you know, Bethesda's other problems, RE Fallout, you know, that was a big mess. So I think the fact this one ticked well for Bethesda, that it launched well, you know, there was no leaks. There was, you know, like the cast didn't leak, which is always good.
Yeah.
And just in general, it seemed to launch, like, you know, it's got different reactions for the game itself, not the cast, mm-hmm. just the game itself and the mechanics and stuff. But that's the game teams, not the voice work. But like in general, you know, for it to be fairly positive, from what you've heard, that's definitely a good sign. And like you said, they didn't cut you, which is always good.
Like literally, like I promise you, like as actors, whether you do a video game or like a film or a TV show, you don't know until you actually see it. Like I've had so many of my friends that it happened to, where they shot like a big scene in a film or like a big multiple scenes or a huge character on a show, and then they watch it and they're not there. Like they were completely cut out. So it's always like, you always have that anxiety, like, you know, so as actors, we always know that we don't know for sure until we actually see it, you know, on air. And when I saw it on IMDb, I was like, okay, so this is definitely, you know, definitely there. Cause you never know, you know, you never know, but I'm very happy they kept me. And it's, you know, I was also looking forward to like knowing what I look like, you know? Cause I didn't know, you know, all I knew is that she was an ex showgirl, but so then I saw me and I was like, oh, there I am, you know? So, but yeah.
Are you going to cosplay her? Are you going to cosplay her at some stage?
Oh, interesting. Well, if requested, sure. You know, again, I'm always happy to play. So sure. Why not? She's so stern. Like she's like, do you know my friend?
Visually, you're kind of very similar. So to dress up as her for like a con wouldn't be that far out of the realm of realism. So
yeah.
And if someone someone go, you're from Wolfenstein, and then they realize that it's your actual character, would be be kind of a meta thing, which would be pretty cool.
I would have to really straighten my hair and, you know, and
I think
look really mean.
A bit as well.
What's that?
I think color it a bit as well, because from memory she's a little bit blonde. So
she's more of a, like a redhead ish. Again, she just never smiles. She's like, you know, business. She's like, you know my friend Claude? You know the armorer? Go get him, you know, like, and it's like that the whole time. So there's no smiling for Anaïs.
I really hope there's subtitles for that in the game, because
I forget. Hold on.
No, I would imagine there is, being, you know, a AAA game.
Yeah, maybe, but like we go back and forth between French and English with a French accent. So it's you can understand. It's just like little words here and there. Like, allez, c'est parti, let's go. Like we did a lot of repetition. You know, it's also a French learning game. You know, you watch it and then you play it. And then you
learn French, play Wolfenstein.
You're like, c'est parti. So yeah, there's a lot of repetition, so that, you know, for people that don't speak French, but they definitely wanted to have that flavor. And again, like a lot of it was improvised, and you know, so it was really fun. Again, highly, highly recommend Tom Keegan as a director. He was wonderful.
For those wondering, that is actually one of Moni's dialects, which is why she's done so much voice work. Such as The Break on Netflix, I believe, and also dubbing director on Unit 42, also on Netflix. There's quite a bit of Netflix work that Monia has done at this stage. Netflix should really sponsor us because we mention them nearly every episode. And Monia does an awful lot of dubbing because, and I'm trying to remember because I always get confused between you and Sunli, how many accents is it, how many different languages do you speak again?
Okay, so my first is French, my second is Dutch, my third would be English, my fourth is Spanish, then I speak conversational Arabic, but that's Tunisian Arabic because my dad is Tunisian, and a little bit of Portuguese. I used to speak better Portuguese because I lived in Brazil for a little bit, but I can definitely, you know, keep a conversation. But yeah, so 5.5, I guess.
Yeah. So if you ever want to get into voice work, now you know how. Just learn 5 languages.
Yeah. I know. Easy peasy. Lemon squeezy. It's actually funny because I mostly work either with a French or Arabic, like a Arabic accent. Which is funny because like a lot of French, I'm from Belgium originally, but my, you know, we speak French there, which is apparently not a known fact because they're like, oh, do you speak Belgian? And I'm like, there's no such thing as a Belgian language, but that's okay. So a lot of French actors, a lot of French people that live here, have lived here for a long time, have a really strong French accent. Like I know a lot of people that do. And then I'm one of the few that doesn't, and I end up booking work where I put on that accent that I don't naturally have, where those, you know, where some people actually have that accent naturally, and they book too, like not, you know, they do too. But when I do, I'm like, this is really funny, like, you know, because again, like you can be like, oh yeah, like I'm from Paris and I've lived in Los Angeles for like 10 years. But like, I will never lose this accent. Like this accent is part of me and, it's not going anywhere, you know? So that's the case with a lot of French speakers. So yeah.
Jarring.
And then Arabic is, I get inspired by my cousins and in Tunisia, because when they speak English, they speak it with an Arabic accent, you know, like it's very, and then they're like, oh, I live in Los Angeles now. Oh, that's wonderful, wonderful. I'm so happy. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy. Yeah, and I just have, because like I mimic, that's why I'm good with accents and languages, is that all I do is copy sounds. You know, I'm a musician first. Like I play the piano and I've been singing my whole life. I studied opera. And music and languages are very similar, like very, very similar. It's sound waves. It's like, you know, intonation and all of that. So I think, you know, that's why I'm good at accents, you know, and languages, because I just copy sounds. There's a funny fun fact about me. If I see a word, even in English, I see a word that I've never heard, I won't know how to pronounce it. I won't know. I have to hear it. If I hear it, then I'm all set to go. But if I haven't, then I might mispronounce it, because it's like I have this like thing in my head, this place where all my sounds go, And once I just need to hear it once. Once I've heard it once, I know how to do it. But if I haven't heard it and I'm like, then I don't know. I actually have to do a new accent for a play I was just cast in. I'm going to be in two plays coming up, which is really, really fun because I haven't been on stage for a while. So it's going to be a lot of fun, but I have to do this Rhode Island accent. So I'm really working hard because that's a new one that I've never done. So the director is being really sweet and like working with me and sending me samples, but like he's sending me certain words so that I know how to say them. But yeah, like Rhode Island accent, you know, is I've just started, so it's really not that great, but it's really like they don't pronounce the last letter of things a lot. You know, it's like instead of your father, it's like your father. You know, it's like there's no R, you know. So I'm working on that and I'm, you know, trying my best, and but it's really fun. That's a completely new one.
For those that live near you, what are those plays?
Okay, so I'm in LA, and these are LA based, but I travel between here and Atlanta because I have reps I have reps in both places, and New York actually. So I'm always like I'm in LA sometimes, in Atlanta sometimes, I'm in New York sometimes. I just rotate, but these plays are in LA. One of them is called Those Who Leave, and that's going to be in end of October in Studio City. And the other one is called Beardo, and that's, I think, October 4th, 5th, 6th, or like 4th, 6th, 7th. I'll post about it on social once I have the exact dates, and they're both comedies, and which is funny because I'm usually a dramatic actress, but I'm like, you know what? This is really fun. And Those Who Leave, I play that woman from Rhode Island, from Providence. And in the other one is actually a musical, which is really fun. I went to an open call a couple weeks ago. I haven't done an open call in so long. And I was like, oh, this looks fun, you know. And it's part of this whole festival that is putting on plays. And I'm really excited. They have 1 week of Spanish language plays, 1 week of English language, and 1 week focused on LGBT. So it's a really inclusive and open festival, which is really exciting. And I went to this open call, and I did this monologue, and I didn't have a monologue because I hadn't auditioned for theater in so long. I was like, oh my God. So I wrote one. I was like, I'm just going to write my own thing.
As you do.
So I wrote a monologue, and I was like, I was like, this is always my go-to when I'm not sure. Like there was a showcase earlier this year, and I also wrote my own scene. I'm like, you know what? I know me, you know, better than anyone. So I know, you know, and I do write. So I was like, you know what? This might not be half bad. And I went in and I did my monologue, and they really liked it. And then they asked me to sing because I said that I studied opera. So I sang a little bit, and I spoke a little Spanish because they wanted to hear that as well. And then like 30 minutes after I left, one of the directors from the play, because there were like 30 directors there, one of the directors from the play, you know, texted me. He's like, hey, I love your audition. And actually in the play that I wrote, there was nobody singing, but now I want you to sing. You inspired me to make this a musical. And I'm like, great. You know, so I'm going to get to sing in that's the Beardo one, written by Alejandro Haber. If I mispronounce that, he's going to kill me, but I'm sorry. So that's a musical, and that's early October. And then the other one is a regular play, and that's late October. So I'm going
to
be busy.
You're inspiring directors to change things.
Yeah, but that seems to be my thing, you know. But again, like, it's the best compliment, and I'm always super, super grateful when that happens, you know. Because, like, as actors, like, you know, as an actor, you can doubt yourself a lot. You're like, oh, you know, what if this is not what they want? Or, like, you're trying to fit exactly what you think they want. And then ultimately, you know, just being you most of the time, not that's what they're looking for, because they might be looking for something else, but then they see it like, oh my God, no, this is what I want, you know? And so I think the best advice, you know, for actors is just be yourself. Don't try to fit what you think they want, because you might change their mind, you know, that, yeah, it happened twice, you know, recently. So yeah, so it's really exciting. And also I think the play from Rhode Island, I don't think that he was expecting to cast a Belgian Tunisian actress to play, you know, a woman from Rhode Island, you know, like they saw a lot of people and then they cast me. So I don't think, but he told me, he's like, oh, when I saw you, I was like, oh my gosh, she's so different. She's like, oh my God, I love it. And I was like, great. So they offered me the part like the day after for the play. There were callbacks, but then he's like, no callback. You just, you know, if you want the part, it's yours. I'm like, yeah. So it's really fun. It's really, really fun. And I get to work with some really great actors. And yeah, again, like as an actor, when you get to play, you're happy, you know? So I'm very happy and I have all my scripts and all my lines to learn. And, you know, it's really, really exciting. And all my accents, my new Providence accent, you know, so yeah.
For those wondering about when you said about the drama, doing drama a lot of the time, Monia has actually done some comedy again. And then this is Rudy Vanessa, we mentioned earlier, with Sona Lee, who we have had on previously. So you haven't heard that one, go back and listen. And that was although it's a shortish web series and really wanting a season two, was that like your first step into like a comedy sort of environment, but also pulling on the drama a little bit as well? Because your character Alex is very much dramatic.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I had done comedy before that. I mean, I did two soap operas, which is definitely not funny. So not there. I would have to go back in time. Maybe, but it's kind of like it's a dark comedy. You know, like Vida Vanessa is a dark comedy. It's really funny, but it's a dark comedy. I think like, well, actually, you know, sorry, The Beardo is also kind of a dark comedy, but it's really, really funny. But Those Who Leave is more like a comedy, like the timing, it's like back and forth and it's witty. I am naturally witty. So it really fits, you know. I haven't done yet like the big, broad, over the top comedy that I haven't done yet. I would love to. It's, you know, I would love to do that.
Is that why you just clicked with Sona Lee so well, because of that wittiness? Because you're both very witty, very funny.
Yeah. We go back and forth.
But yeah, both of you do really dramatic roles, I might add.
Yeah.
Like Sona Lee plays this ferocious, like murderous bounty hunter, and then you're playing like this bitchy French showgirl, and yeah, both of you are inherently funny, inherently witty.
Yeah.
And you both played
dramatic. Yeah, thank you. And we both play, yeah. I tend to get cast as the bitch a lot, which, you know, is not a reflection of who I am. But I do a good bitch. I do. So, you know, and then my face, I think just my face does that, you know? So I do, but on Those Who Leave, actually in the play, I actually don't play a bitch at all. I'm really nice. And I'm like, oh, see, I can be nice too, you know? So, but it's really fun. But yeah, Sona Lee and I, we go way back. I see her a lot.
And onto her. Your dramatics, I love her as well. She's one of the first to have my back in, particularly in this podcast, as everyone's aware, but also just in general. Like, if you're a decent person, she's lovely to you. If you're a dick, she's gonna call you out on it. That's just who she is.
Yeah, that's
you say dumb shit, she's gonna call you out on it. But she's the sweetest, most supportive person if you're on a good side.
Exactly. But you know what? Like, I think as women, like, that's how you have to be. Mm. If not, you get stepped all over. And I'm with her. Like, I'm ultra nice and ultra supportive, and I help as many people as I can. And, you know, like, I've done everything to help my friends get jobs, and, you know, and like, and I'm happy to do that without asking for anything in return. But if you're an asshole, then I want nothing to do. I want nothing to do with you. I'm not a pushover. I never was, even as a little girl. I always, and that's just, if I had a daughter, I would raise her like that, to not be a pushover, to stand your ground when, when you should, and be really nice to the people who are nice back, I think as women, sometimes we might feel like, oh, we want to make people happy and we want, and then you kind of lose yourself in that. So I don't think there's anything wrong to not, if people do well to, to stand your ground. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And for those, when we're saying about traumatic, I'm going to touch on two. One of my absolute favorites. The other one I'm yet to see, but going by the trailer, is probably going to be a favorite as well. Firstly, I want to touch on Ignofear, and on top of this as well, as was when we mentioned Voodoo Vanessa. Voodoo Vanessa is still winning awards, I might add. And it's been back for about 2 years, from memory, if I remember correctly. And Ignofear, I believe, has also won awards. But in saying that, I believe I first saw it last year. However, it's still topically relevant. And I'll let you explain what it is exactly. The breakdown basis of it is essentially racially based, but it's also currently appropriate for the current climate, both politically, particularly in America, unsurprisingly. Mm-hmm. But also probably around the world, probably even in Australia as well. I mean, it's definitely in America at the moment. I'll let you explain what it's about without dropping spoilers, because I've seen the whole thing, and others may not have yet.
Right. So Ignofear, I wrote Ignofear now like 3 years ago, 2 years ago. I don't know. It goes by so fast. And I wrote it because my grandma lost her dad, so my great-grandfather, to the Nazis back when, these guys were ruling, unfortunately. And she had never told me the story about how it happened and how, and why, and not why, but, what it was. And then she finally told me that story, and it ended up being a few months before she passed. And when she told me her story, I was like, oh, I'm going to write a film about it. And she's like, what? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to write your story so that, it's going to be immortalized. And she's like, oh, okay. And, so I was just going to write the part, like that part. So like the Belgian family that's just, doing their own thing. But then you start seeing the rise of fascism in Europe, and this was in Belgium, and to the point where her father was taken away, and that was just going to be a film on its own. And then right when I was writing that, I don't even want to say his name.
we all know who you're talking about.
the guy who's currently president. Won the Republican election, right? He hadn't won the election yet, but he won that. And then he started spewing hate and, statements about Muslims and all of that. So a little background on me. Through my mom's side, they came from Poland. So there were Jews from Poland. And then my dad is Tunisian, and my dad's family is Muslim. Right, so I'm a Jurab. I like to call myself a Jurab. I'm partially Jew and partially Arab. I wasn't raised in any religious, it wasn't a religious environment. But like, if you go back, that's where they came from. And I was like, oh my God, this is pissing me off so much. And why haven't we learned from history? Like, this guy is spewing, racism, all the time. And I was like, you know what? Because I had already written part of the first half of the film. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make Ignofear a warning sign. I'm going to make it that, you know, we know what happened back in the 1940s, but what could happen next, you know, if somebody like that is in power, right? And we, so I wrote it and then we shot it. And then the day we finished editing was November 8th. Was that the, I think, yeah, November 8th. I'm confused, but yeah,
about,
November
8th. About a week before. I think that was about a week or, I can't remember. Yeah, so the day,
the day, yeah, I think it's November 8th, the day the election happened. And I finished the film and then won. And I was like, this was supposed to be fiction. You know, like this whole film was not supposed to be happening. And yet now we have somebody that is incredibly racist. And I was trolling, you know, trolling, no, but people were trolling. Mm-hmm. I was looking at Facebook and like in all sorts of comments, and people were like, yeah, Trump is in power. Oh, I said his name. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever his, you know, what's his name? Is in power. Now we can get rid of all the Muslims. Let's kill them all. Let's put them all in a concentration camp. Let's like, we get rid of the Jews, now let's get rid of the Muslims, you know, like crazy things. And I was like, and I just cried. I just cried. And I was like, this is horrible. And yeah, that was almost 2 years ago now. And so we made it to a few festivals, and then we won the audience awards at the California Women Film Festival back in 2017. And then a year after that, I got angry again. Because it was still the same thing, it was still people, you know, like discriminating based on ethnicity, race, religion, more and more, and like people were becoming more and more vocal about it, just because, you know, the president is more and more is vocal about it. So all those who are kind of hiding and like, you know, weren't, you know, were keeping their racist thoughts to themselves were just like out there. And so I wrote another film called For the Love of Hate, which is pretty self-explanatory, which you haven't seen yet.
Which I'm going to add that is very gay.
Very gay.
It's very gay. Yes, I am I'm a lesbian in it. I'm a Muslim. I'm a lesbian Muslim, which, you know, the Muslim community wants to pretend like it doesn't exist, but it does. And that touches on that as well, and on, you know, people judging. Again, I do Muslims a lot because my dad's family is Muslim, and even though I'm not myself, it touches me because I'm like, it's, you know, people are like, oh, they're all terrorists, and, you know, and I'm like, you know what? Like, there are more white males here in America shooting people up than there are Muslim terrorists. So let's just calm down. But again, because every time something pisses me off, I write about it. So that's For the Love of Hate, and you let me know what you think about it when you see it. We won an award with that too. Won the same award, actually, the California Women Film Festival first place audience award this year. And then I re-edited it recently, and I'm going to submit it again. We shortened it a little bit because I felt like it was a little long, and then see how it does. And then until something else pisses me off and I write about it, and you know, that's kind of how it goes.
Is there a way can watch Ignofear at all?
Yeah, Ignofear is online. I don't know the link. I think if you type like Ignofear Moni Ayashi, it should pop up. Let me check actually. I feel like it should. Ignofear is really, really short. And I have the wonderful Ray Prasha in it, who's a dear friend and a wonderful, wonderful actor. He's on Suits. He's on Man in the High Castle. He's on Imposters. Like, he's amazing. Yeah, Ignofear Moni Ayashi.
We'll post that link in the description otherwise.
Okay. For Love of Hate is not available yet, just because it's still, you know, being submitted to festivals. And Ignofear, I was, you know, it was 2 years ago, so I was like, okay, you know. And then I got angry one day and I just posted it because, you know, I was like, okay, I think people need to see this. And I got, you know, wonderful responses, and people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you wrote this before all of this happened. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it was Muslims, but it could be immigrants, like any kind of immigrant, you know, like it doesn't matter as long as you're not American. And I'm quoting that because the true Americans are Native Americans. Everybody else is an immigrant. So let's calm down, you know, but you know, if your skin is not the right color or you don't speak the right language, according to this crazy administration, then, you know, then you don't belong here. So it's cool.
And it's not cool at all. That's part of the reason we wanted Manu on, obviously partly for Wolfenstein, but also for Igno Fear, just because it's so relevant at the moment. And for those that have been with us since the start know that we don't shy away from really strong topics, whether it's Heart Baby with Sean Colin Young or Igno Fear with Monia. Like, we don't stray away from we've even done an episode on climate change. We don't stray away from tackling things that are a little full on or that's going to hit some people's nerves, because it's stuff like this that need to be talked about and hear different people's opinions, such as Monia, who, as she's mentioned, is an immigrant and is directly affected by everything that's going on at the moment. You know, feels targeted by all this racism. And when you're saying that, the thing I've heard so much is it's more the position of power incites people, as you said, that are usually just hiding in the shadows and don't really say it. It's inspiring them to go out and actually say that, because you've got someone that's got all this power and is saying this and is doing it without consequences. And so therefore other people feel, well, yeah, I can go say that. I can go say all this shit that's going to, and without thinking how it's going to affect people, they just say it. And oftentimes it'll hurt people. It'll deeply offend people. And that's why it's so baffling to, I think, the rest of the world still, particularly for, I mean, Australia's got its own problems at the moment. But when you look at it compared to America, it's just going, America, what's it going to take? I mean, like you said, there's so many, funnily enough, or not funny, but to put it ironically, funnily enough, more white people shooting people lately than, as you said, any immigrants or Muslim terrorists. Like, pretty much the ones I was, like, what's it going to take? I mean, I think it might have been Trevor Noah or someone said, like, kids were shot, nothing happened. And then I was like, why the big reaction now when there's two close together? You've had worse, you've had, or not to, you know, knock the last two people's families, but we've had like a whole school of kids be hurt or killed and nothing was done then. So why there a big reaction now? Like, to the rest of the world, nothing's changed. What's it going to take? What's it going to take to get through? And I think FBE covered this really well on YouTube recently when they had a serious discussion and showed the laws of like South Africa and Australia compared to the US, and just going, how does the US not have this stuff? Like, there's so many laws you don't have that are just basic things. Everyone points to Australia because it happened once and we haven't had a mass shooting since. Like, it works. And yet everyone goes, but they're taking away art. You can get guns here. You just need to do a license and go through the proper channels and do a police check and all that. It's not a big, big problem. You're still going to have your amendment. You're still going to have your right to bear arms. You've just got to go through the right channels to get it. Like, you can't get them here. But the reason you don't hear about it is because we've got proper stuff in place. And I can't, of course. It baffles me that it can't get through to when this is why Igno Fear is so jarring when you watch it. And for anyone that listens to this episode, please do go watch Igno Fear and share it, just because it's so relevant to now. And it's, as many said, it focuses on the what's the worst possible outcome that could happen. And as you said, it was before all this happened, which is even more chilling. Because I watched it after this had happened. And it was just it will hit you because it's relevant, it's true, and it doesn't shy away from the truth. And I think and it's an ignorance of the fear, which is, I gather, where the name came from.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine.
Ignorance leads to which then turns into fear. Like, you're afraid of what you don't know.
And it's those perspectives that I think we need to see more of. And,
you know,
that's why we want to get inner fear out there and go, this is a side and a, less, not an opinion, but, like, this is how the other side of the community feels when you say all this shit. This is what can happen if you do say this. This is what has happened. And it's that sort of thing is why you see so many celebrities and particularly so many actresses, yourself, Leslie Ann Brandt, and there's quite a few others that I know. I know Leslie's very vocal with her platform in taking on the current administration in that dealing with this systemic racism and all this shit that just keeps coming from it. I don't lean left or right. I mean, if, you know, off the air, I'll probably lean in a certain way, but, like, you're entitled to your opinions. Just don't say stupid shit that's going to cause problems, which is exactly what is happening at the moment, in that, it, as we said, it's allowing people that normally wouldn't feel incensed to go say all this shit, to actually go say this shit to directly to people's faces. You know, as you said, trolling on law, not so much trolling, just being brazenly racist online and saying all these things without going, oh, I wonder how that might affect someone that sees this. And that's the sort of issues that we really need to deal with. So I'd love for you to get more angry because you put out good content when you get angry.
There we go. So, but let's just, you know, I don't want more things to piss me off. But yeah, but no, I think there's just a ton of ignorance and, you know, and to go back to a little bit of the, you know, the gun control and all of that, which I'm, again, you're going to watch For the Love of Hate, and, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but you'll talk to me after. You know, just, you know, yes, of course, Australia is a wonderful example, you know, where you had a mass shooting and then they put laws in place. Here, they're like taking laws away. Like, there was a law that said if you were mentally disabled, you couldn't own a gun, and then he took that out. So now if you are, you can, that's really smart. Like, that's really, really smart. So you just, you know, if you have a mental problem, you just go in, buy an AK-47 and just start shooting people because you don't have to be, you know, proven mentally well anymore. You know, so it's you know, I'm so mad about this whole thing. And like, and Americans and their guns, like, oh my gosh, it's my right to own a gun. Yes. You know what? Yes. If you want your gun, yes. But who needs a semi-automatic weapon?
And the key part of this that everyone raises is it actually says about a militia, which is you don't need. Like, we're not in a war. I mean, the way America is, yes, it very much seems like one. And I want to get this on the record because it's something I really want to say to, particularly because it pissed me off so much, and maybe I should write when I get angry too.
It just
pissed me off so much when he said this of video games are to blame. For starters, and I'd like to say this as an Australian, because for those that are wondering just how rare guns are in Australia, I've held one. It was when I was in the Navy Cadets, it was our CO's weapon. Registered, licensed, the whole lot. It was not loaded. I've never fired a gun. And for those that know me, I'm 26. So that's like, there's a lot of people in America that are younger than me that probably have fired one by now. And I've never fired one. We never got to fire one because there was so much messy paperwork around the Defence Force that our firing range never got opened. So I have never fired one. I've held them on Navy boats and at the training ship that I was at as a Navy cadet. That is literally it. never fired one, never bought one, never, I don't even know how to shoot one. And that's got to tell you the relevance of it works. The fact that, I mean, the suicide rate here, I can pretty much tell you the gun rate would be very low. And the fact that the access to it is so hard and so rigorous, I don't even want to get one because it costs so much, it's so much paperwork, and you've got limited places you can use it. Yeah, in America, I could just waltz in. I said to people, I would love to go to America. I'm too terrified to go to America right now.
Yeah.
If a sponsor or something flew me over, you know, then I'd obviously go. But it would be very cautiously in the fact that I'd be terrified. Like, I can go to a cinema here and just watch a movie. Every time I see someone go, oh, I'm cautious to go to a cinema in America because I might get shot. What sort of life is that? Like, what's it going to take for America to realize we need to do something? Because the rest of the world is just looking on going, what the fuck are you doing? What's it going to take?
Right. Like,
the weirdest country I know that's just so onto this, don't take it away from me. Like, you've got all these other fucking rights. Don't try and cling to this one. Like, you know, you can still have them if you need them. You know?
Yeah.
Just put some rules in place. And I can tell you now, video games are not the cause. I doubt you'll ever hear it, but for fuck's sake, they're not the cause. For starters, as people have mentioned, video games are everywhere else in the world, and there's no issues like that. So it's not video games. It's the lack of controls and laws. So stop trying to blame mental health. For starters, I saw how that affected everyone on Twitter, like when to blame video games and mental health. Yes, mental health's a part of it, but you can't blame it on that. It's the ease of access of which these are getting into hands of people that is the issue here, not video games. We've got violent video games here. I mean, we've literally just got one banned by the classification board because they used drugs as a rewarding system for the player. That's the sort of weird shit that everyone goes, Australia, what are you doing? And that's on a video game. So what the hell's going on that you can't do a law? Like, those are the weird laws we've got. Why is there a weird law in America like that that does that? And I can tell you now, video games are not the cause because we've got a lot of shooters here. It does not go inspire people to go shooting here. I don't think that's once happened here. I mean, it's probably happened in small amounts, but never once has it gone, oh, I was inspired by this game. Because it's not an issue here. And I think that's where you're going to find Ignafy really relevant in that. It hits right on the head of exactly what's happening right now. And hauntingly, 2 years on, it's still relevant to now, which is not good. The fact it's still really relevant to right now. I mean, it's just great for Monia, that it's great for you, that it's still relevant and being talked about. It's not great for the world that that's still relevant. That shouldn't be the case. It should be, oh, that was a glitch. That was a one-off. The fact it's still relevant is jarring, and I highly suggest everyone go watch it.
Thank you.
I would like to say you'd enjoy it. You'd enjoy it in a very ironic way, I'd say, in that it's just as relevant. I can't say much more without spoiling because it's just good.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
For those that are wondering, Wolfenstein Youngblood is now available across, I believe, all platforms. You have to check PC because I don't know if they've had that Epic Store mess or not. I don't believe so, so it should be on Steam. And it's also on consoles now. I imagine Stadia later in the year or now, depending on when you're listening to it. And Ignofear will be in the description below. For the love of hate, you have to wait on that. And we will drop Monia's socials in the links below so you can follow her on there and be kept up to date with all of those. Monia is also on eNews International as well. Is that still current?
Not anymore.
Used to be, though. Back in the days.
No, not that long ago, but now, not anymore. No. The show doesn't exist anymore. Nothing to do with me. I didn't do anything. But
was
yeah, no,
your
I
fault.
worked there. Yeah, no. It's not me. But yeah, no, not anymore. No, I did.
And of course, Voodoo Vanessa is very much on YouTube at the moment. And for those that are wondering how much time it's going to take out of your schedule, Igno Fee is very short, about 12 minutes from memory. And Voodoo Vanessa is equally as short, about, I can't remember if it's 3 or 6. Suddenly kill me for this, but I think it's about 3 or 6 minutes per episode, and there's five. So out of your day, it will take under an hour to watch all this goodness. So,
1 hour for quality content.
oh, yes, absolutely. And hopefully, we get a season two of Voodoo Vanessa. I have been hassling Sonali about doing that.
Yeah,
That needs to happen.
we're yeah. I agree.
And I like to think there's sexual tension there between Alex and Vanessa, but
Oh, interesting.
Sonali won't. She won't deny it, but she also won't confirm it. So maybe that's a season two thing, hopefully.
Maybe. You would know more than me, because we haven't talked about that yet.
I did mention it to her. She's very much like, she wasn't against the idea of it, but she also said she'd probably deliberately toy with this for the fun of it. Not
Probably.
queer bait, just to clarify, but just to really toy with the fact that, or allude to it rather than actually directly doing it, which would be very subtly. But in saying that, you've got Wolfenstein, Youngblood, Igno Fear, and Voodoo Vanessa to all watch, play, etc. Now, is there any other upcoming project? And also the play. So if you're in LA, go see Monia on stage.
Yes.
Get to do
And
something
then
that I sadly cannot.
and then upcoming, well, I have some things boiling, but nothing set in stone yet. So we'll talk about it if it becomes a reality.
Saying
If it's a
that,
for sure thing.
Monia will return. It's just a matter of
Monia, the
when.
return of Monia. Yeah,
Just a matter
exactly.
of when. Once she's able to talk about things, which, given
Exactly,
NDAs,
yeah.
could be months.
Could be months, could be 5 years, we don't know, you know.
Well,
But I'm
I'd
always
like to think the podcast is still going by then, hopefully.
Yeah, it will, like 5, 10, 15 years. Let's just
Oh, okay. Setting out
aim
the roadmap for us now. No pressure
to
whatsoever. Thank you once again for giving up your time and chat with this, Monia. Been an
start. No
absolute
problem.
pleasure.
Thank you.
I've been your host, TJ,
Thank you.
alongside Monia Aichi, and we'll see you all in the next episode.
Awesome. Thank you.